Welcome into the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Have a very interesting show for you today, folks. You know, we did a show, Supernatural News, where we had a story Bruiser and I were talking about that was a little discombobulating, a little off-putting. It might have even been a little creepy. It was a story about a man in India. And it got me thinking. You might remember this story, but a story about a man in India who made a pact with his wife. And when she passed, she wanted him to remember her always. So in order to remember her, she had a statue built out of silicone. You remember this story? Yeah. And it was such a lifelike statue of her that he decided to put it not only just in his home, but she sits out on the front porch swing with him. Again, kind of creepy. And he's perfectly fine with it. There's pictures in this article of him and her together, and he's perfectly fine with it. I don't know how else to put it, other than he's leading a perfectly fine life with it. He's abiding by his wife's wishes. And he doesn't seem to miss her at all. In fact, he believes that she's there in spirit and that she's there in body, although it be a silicone body. And he's able to deal with the trauma of death that's there, although she's not there. And we'd like to think in this, the belief of our afterlife, that she's moved on, whatever his belief may be. Let me read a little bit of the story to you to give you an idea of what it is. Tapas Sandilya is a retired government employee from India's West Bengal. He lost his wife of 39 years in 2021, during the COVID-19 pandemic, which is part of our topic for today's show. We're going to talk about losing a loved one in the COVID-19 pandemic and how you mourn that person and how you do that without giving them a proper goodbye. Indrani was taken to the hospital, that's his wife, while he was forced into isolation. So he couldn't be by her side when she passed away. Determined to at least fulfill one of his wife's final wishes, Tapas started looking for an artist that could create a lifelike silicone statue of Indrani and spent 6 months and around $3,000 on the unusual project. Okay. Last year, Sandilya found a sculptor willing to work on the life-size silicone model of his late wife and spent days working with him on a clay cast that would later become the base of the silicone casting. The 65-year-old made sure that the model came out to his liking, insisting that nothing less than Indrani's actual facial expression would do for him. And he did create quite a lifelike sculpture of Indrani. It looks exactly like her. She's dressed in a silk sari and everything. Now, albeit bizarre, this sort of tribute to a late spouse is not unheard of in India. It's been done before. Back in 2021, there was a woman who built a marble idol of her late husband, and a year before that, there was a story of a man who lived with a lifelike sculpture of his dead wife. But this man did it because he lost his wife to COVID-19 and couldn't say a proper goodbye. Our guest today is Reverend Oresti Deversa. He's an interfaith or all-faiths minister ordained by the New Seminary in New York City. He helps people by offering spiritual guidance coaching to find their true life's purpose and walk their true spiritual path. He's also a business coach, consultant, corporate trainer, author, university lecturer, public speaker, spiritual coach, and advisor. He also has appeared on radio and television, as well as having his work featured in various publications. He has a book out there that we're going to talk about today. It's called I Didn't Get a Chance to Say Goodbye, Now What Can I Do? And it deals with losing people, specifically to COVID-19 and not having a chance to say goodbye. But we're going to expand that topic a little bit today as well. We're going to talk about what it's like to lose somebody and not have the chance to say goodbye, as we deal a lot with pain and loss here on this show. The full title is also Practical Tools to Learn manage the pain, anger, and sorrow of not achieving closure with a loved one and start living well-balanced, peaceful, and a content life. Let's welcome to the show Reverend Oresti. Reverend, how are you today?
Very good, thank you, and thank you for having me as a guest on your show today.
Well, I appreciate it, and the reason I so appreciate it is because with a paranormal show, you wouldn't think a paranormal show would deal with a lot of loss and grief, but you'd be surprised, Reverend, how much we do deal with it. I have a lot of people who come to me, and the first thing they want is they want to talk to a psychic or someone who will connect them with someone on the other side because they do miss that certain person so much.
Well, sure. It's only normal to, obviously, if you had an attachment to a body, a being here, that you're going to have a time of grieving and mourning of that. And unfortunately, if that ceremony or that ritual of not saying goodbye is not complete, our spirits are searching to get that closure and or assistance in the healing and bereavement process.
There's a lot of times too, Reverend, where we have instances where people are reaching out and they want to get a hold of either a psychic or they want to get a hold of someone who maybe they're seeing visions or they're seeing that loved one who's passed away. They've passed away too soon. And it's been a traumatic death. And a lot of times they haven't had that chance to say goodbye. They feel like that person was taken too soon. Such as with the COVID-19 pandemic, and it's that trauma that really plays on people. And I want to ask you first, Reverend, and here's my first shot off the bow here. Why is it that a traumatic death is such a hard death for us to stomach, for us to kind of digest?
Well, all deaths, are a sudden death. Whether even if you know the person's dying, say, of cancer, at the point of death, it shocks us all. No matter what people say, we were expecting this person to die, they had cancer. But on the moment of death, it's shocking to the emotional system. It's magnified umpteen times if it's done in a manner that was unexpected, a death vis-a-vis a COVID or a sudden accident. All of a sudden, the person goes to work, and unfortunately, they don't come back home. So that sense of closure is not established, and hence, now what starts is a healing slash what I like to call a bereavement journey to get that closure.
And the reason I ask that question, now, some people in it might say, well, duh, Tim, it's a tragic death. Why wouldn't we mourn harder? The reason I ask that and the reason I put that out there is this. We all have to come to an understanding, at least as we become adults, that death is it's inevitable. It's as inevitable as each year you're going to have to pay your taxes, as in each year the seasons change, as in each year there are certain things that just come up that you can't avoid, that things are going to happen. We all know when we wake up in the morning, that may be our last day, Reverend. Why is it that death is such an impossible thing for us to wrap our head around?
Well, I understand what you just said. The reality of it is the following, in my belief system, is we're made up of the following components: the physical, the mental, the emotional, and the spiritual. The physical is pretty straightforward, the body. The mental is the mind. The emotional is the emotional heart, and the spiritual is our life force. Mentally, yes, we understand the person is deceased, and we understand why they're deceased. But emotionally, emotions are not logical or linear. People feel what they feel, how they feel it, when they feel it, for as long as they feel it. The challenge is the healing is really more in the emotions and the emotional heart that the person needs to come to really an understanding. And we're not talking about forgetting the person. We're talking about managing the memory of the person in a manner that one can go on with their life. As that person who unfortunately has passed away has moved on, we need to move on. But the challenge is if we don't get that closure or some semblance of closure or have tools to deal with the bereavement journey, that's when things become very challenging in a person's life.
With a pandemic like we've gone through with COVID-19, Tell us how it affects the mass psychology and the amount of deaths that we had, and why is it that we want to deny that something so strong has come through our population and taken so many people? Why is it that we want to turn a blind eye to exactly as many people that have been taken from us as it has happened?
Well, I think we're looking, because of the depth, breadth, and scope of the pandemic, and for the most part, most people have not experienced a pandemic, epidemic of this magnitude. It came on pretty strong, and it's still around, but it's lingering now. Mm-hmm. But if you recall, in the initial year, it came on like gangbusters, okay? Things didn't make rhyme or reason. People were getting infected, and once they reached that point where they had to be escorted to the hospital, the statistics were staggering, that most people, once they went in, rarely came out. And if you were attached to a ventilator, you were pretty much given a death sentence. So the pain, the massive amount of pain in the quick amount of time, didn't give the society or the zeitgeist, the fancy word, time to process everything. And then you didn't get the closure part of saying goodbye to the loved one. So now you're left with this hole in your heart that needs to be handled. It's more of a wound in your heart now that needs some types of salve and or some type of closure. And when we talk about closure, we're not talking about forgetting the person. We're talking about, again, managing their memory in a manner that you could move forward with your life.
And that's important. You know, we talk about managing grief, and it's tough. I think to the average person who hasn't had the training, the skills, or been shown how to move through grief, I think the average person thinks, well, you know what? I'll have my tear or two in memory of them, and then I got to stuff it and move on. I've got life to deal with. Why is that not the way to do it?
Well, realistically, as I mentioned before, emotions are emotions. They're not logical or linear, you know, but you really need processes to help you move forward in your life. And one thing I want to start our discussion with here is everything that I state is in addition to, not instead of. So if your listeners are in therapy or they're part of bereavement groups, they should continue these techniques and activities. I'm pretty much offering an additional set of tools in a toolbox to help them on their bereavement journey.
And that's excellent. And you're right. Yeah, people should continue the treatments that they're getting to move through grief, because that's important as well. And you're right about that. So Reverend, again, the unseen, not getting the chance to say goodbye and what we're going to do about that. Let's talk about what it is we're going to do about that, because there is some things that we can do ourselves. And then is there things also that we can do outside of what we can do for ourselves?
Sure. I mean, there are various tools which I'm going to start discussing with your folks and your listeners. But it's really important. It all starts with self-care. The other person, the reality of it is they've transitioned and they're gone. So it's important to take care of oneself first. And that, not in a narcissistic kind of way, but self-care is very important, because if you can't take care of yourself, you won't be able to move further. So the first tool I recommend to everyone is to learn a very simple relaxation method of just learning how to meditate. And we're not talking about anything really outlandish. We're talking about just really basic meditation of calming the mind, body, and spirit down, so they could start being in a place where they could start processing and dealing with their bereavement journey. That's probably the first tool I would recommend.
Let me ask you this before we go any further, Reverend, and I don't know if this is part of your belief system or not, but what happens if, and this has happened with some of our audience, when they start to meditate, things start to come through with them, and say maybe they do either run across a spirit guide or they run across something psychically that connects them with their loved one. What do they do at that point?
Well, it's advisable when meditating you have a notebook handy, because what's probably happening is that your loved one's trying to connect with you. But when meditating, people all of us have certain psychic gifts, and they're called the five C's: clairvoyant, clairessence, and a few other ones that I can't name off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. We all have these gifts. Some of us to a more degree, some of us to a lesser degree. Many times, when the message comes through, it may come through as a word, as a feeling, as a image. So it's important to start writing these things down, because what will happen is when you start looking back at all these messages you get, you'll start seeing a cryptic message start putting itself together. You know, many times people expect the loved one to speak to them through their meditation. You may have that gift, but that leads us to another tool, working with a professional medium. What's happened is what's been para, you know, what used to be unnormal is becoming normal and mainstream.
Okay.
So there are people who have the gift of mediumship, who have the ability to communicate with your loved ones, and they become the go-between the other side, what we call the other side of the veil, the other side of life, and this side, and they could assist you in communicating with your loved ones to get a reading, which in essence becomes a healing many times. And what happens is what all those loose ends, what needed to be said, becomes finally said, so people can get closure and move on. And we could discuss that, if you like, in more detail about how to work with a medium and what to look for in finding a medium and so on and so forth.
Sure. We'll do that here in a moment. I do want to ask one question about that, though, before we jump into the medium and working with a medium. And that is this. I know for some people, they get stuck on that step. They tend to want to work with the medium, but then they want to, it's kind of like an itch you can't quite scratch too much, and they end up causing a wound because of that, another wound.
Sure.
Because they can't get enough of wanting to hear from that person. They don't go past that step. They want to keep the line of communication open, and they don't want to let go. How do you get past that point? What do you need to do inside to let yourself let go and say it's okay just to hear one more time and then let it go?
Well, mediumship is a tool, and like all tools, you want to use it judiciously and you want to use it wisely. It's the reality of it is it's not going to take that other person back. You know, you use a medium when you feel the need to speak to the other person. But usually, I would say within two or three readings, you should be able to wrap everything up that needs to be wrapped up. And then it becomes the reality of facing that it's time to let that person go. So they can do their work on the other side, and you can do your work on this side. Based on people's belief system, very quickly, my background is I was raised Catholic, and I still practice Catholicism to a certain degree, mm-hmm. but I'm also an interfaith minister, all-faith minister. And what that means is I've studied all the major religions and various spiritual practices. I work with shamans and other belief systems as well. And I believe the important thing is as follows, that what do you believe in God, and do you believe in a loving God or a vengeful God? Because if you believe in a loving God, then obviously he doesn't want to see his children suffer. And by working with the medium and other people in the metaphysical space who have the tools to help you get closure, to move on with your life, you have the tools. But the reality of it is there comes a time where you have to face the reality that the person is gone. They want the best for you, and you should want the best for them, and you should want the best for yourself.
Okay. Let's do this, Reverend. Let's take our break right here. When we come back, let's talk about, again, these tools and get into how to use the medium properly as we're getting through the grief of losing our loved one. The book is I Didn't Get a Chance to Say Goodbye, Now What Can I Do? Practical Tools to Learn to Manage the Pain, Anger, and Sorrow of Not Achieving Closure with a Loved One and Start Living a Well-Balanced, Peaceful, and Content Life. We have a link to it in the description of this show. When we come back, we'll talk more with Reverend Oreste J. Diaversa about what we do in the second step. We've meditated. Now we're going to a medium, and how we use that medium to make contact with our loved one, and what we're doing with this medium in order to get over losing our loved one. We'll do that when we come back. You're listening to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. Our guest is Reverend Oreste J. Diaversa. The book is I Didn't Get a Chance to Say Goodbye, Now What Can I Do? Practical Tools to Learn, Manage the Pain, Anger, and Sorrow of Not Achieving Closure with a Loved One and Start Living a Well-Balanced, Peaceful, and Content Life. Reverend Oreste, here's where we're at. We've started to meditate. We're going now to a medium to try and get us through the loss of that loved one that we didn't get to see before they passed. Maybe it was COVID-19. Maybe it was a sudden traumatic death that we didn't get to see them through. And we're going to a medium now, and we're trying to figure out how we do this and how we manage this properly. Tell us some of the steps in which we do this properly so that we get what we need to help see this through.
Well, first thing, you want to make sure you work with the medium that you're comfortable with, because they become the go-between between you and the loved one. Next, you really should have a list. Initially, start out with, I would say, half a dozen issues, questions that you want to get resolved. It's you're not going there. I know it's, even though it's emotional, but you really want to go there with the intention of wrapping up these loose ends to get closure. Now, again, when we say closure, we're not talking about forgetting this person and writing them off. Okay, they're dead. They're going to move on. I'm going to move on. That's it. It's about getting the satisfaction of saying that final goodbye on your terms, on their terms, because either obviously they're open issues, or you wouldn't be in the grieving process. Another tool that you could use before you go to a medium that could help you as well is to write letters to the deceased. Well, they're dead. Why are you writing letters? Energetically, we're all vibrations. So what you want to do is you want to write a letter, all right? And this could be multiple letters, and it could be doesn't have to be one session. And you really want to pour out what's going on with you. Love. And if you didn't like them and you had open issues with hatred, put that on each letter. Mm-hmm. When you're done with the letter, you want to burn it. The reason for the burning is to release those words into the ethers, that energy, that vibration, so that it goes up into the ethers to get to them. Because obviously, once we transition, we're not flesh and bone. We don't have our five senses. We're energy. And after you're done burning, what you want to do is put salt on it to neutralize that energy.
Okay.
And you want to do this outside, and you can go to a dollar store, which we have those all over the country, and buy those disposable aluminum tins so that you do everything safely outside. So you may want to start with the letter process first before going to a medium, all right? Okay. Because that will alleviate and get a lot of what you've been thinking out of your subconscious and get those emotions out. But once you've decided to go to a medium, the first thing is important is to find the right medium. How does one find the right medium? Mm-hmm. You obviously, in this day and age, we have the luxury of the internet. You want to look at their internet profile / website. You want to look at their reviews. You want to speak to other people if you can. You want to see if they produced any YouTubes. Also, the best thing would be, if they're going to do any public demonstrations of mediumship, go there and attend it and see if this person resonates with you, their belief system. Does it resonate with your belief system? Again, the mediumship and the medium is a tool to help you get resolution so you can move on.
Yeah, I think the finding the medium is the probably the toughest part of this process. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, exactly. And especially in this day and age where we're doing work literally globally. You could find mediums literally all over the country, in this country, and literally all over the world. For instance, in England, mediumship is thought of very highly where they have mediumship schools. Here in the United States, we're getting to that point. Because what we're seeing is what used to be paranormal yesterday is becoming normal today. There is one person, if you've got access to cablevision, her name is Teresa Caputo, and she also goes by the Long Island Medium. And you may want to look at her shows. In the past, there was another gentleman named John Edwards who did mediumship. So you can get an understanding what it is and what it isn't. Mm-hmm. Right, because mm-hmm. many people don't really understand what mediumship is. Unfortunately, you know, they may have had a bad experience with the medium, or have heard stories of mediumship, or unfortunately have seen bad videos and bad, you know, information about it. So in my opinion, God in his infinite wisdom has created mediums to help people with their grieving process. I know many people are especially who are based in the Bible studies or in biblical work, claim that there's a passage in the Bible that one should not go to soothsayers and card readers and things of that nature. And again, my argument, as I specify in the book, is, do you believe in a loving God or a vengeful God? Because if you believe in a loving God, here God has given us a tool to help us with grieving and the bereavement process.
That's interesting. Because that is thrown out there quite a bit, and that's the main argument from the religious side of things, that you know, that there's the passage there in the Bible, and that forever is the battle there. I guess is the best way to put it.
No, I can understand that. That's why I really I spent the time identifying that in the book, because again, you know, one has to really sit down and try to look at things with a non-emotional mind, because the Bible, unfortunately, can be open to interpretation. It wasn't written by the hand of God. It was written by many people. There are parts of the Bible that are missing, parts of the Bible that have been edited. And some people believe in this, some people don't believe in this. For instance, well, let's even talk about the Ten Commandments. Let's take one of the commandments, that thou shalt not kill. Well, realistically, it should be thou shalt not murder, because you can't tell me if a loved one's you have a loved one's in front of you, and a killer's walking in the door with a machete, and you have the ability to put that person down before they killed your loved ones, you're not going to kill them. You follow me?
Yeah.
So it really should be thou shalt not murder. Murder being predisposed, you're going to do it intentionally. Killing is I killed to survive, and I killed to save that person's life. Did you see the difference?
Yes. Yeah.
Does that make sense? So that's why, you know, the Bible is a very useful tool, and I don't condemn it, but I also ask people to be more circumspect and be more mindful and use their gift of discernment to really discern what it's really saying and what it really means. Because, again, I find it hard to believe that we have a loving God and people are suffering. He wants his children to keep on suffering and not use the gifts of a medium in a proper way to help them on their bereavement journey and their healing journey.
Let me ask you this, Reverend. What happens if you go to a medium, you're sitting there with the medium, and the information you get just sounds suspect? It doesn't sound like something that loved one would say.
Well, mediums, like all professional services, the word professional services or relative, mediums, I won't say they're good mediums and they're bad mediums, but like everything else, they provide a service. I personally use the rule of three. I would try three different mediums before I wrote mediumship off completely. And hence, the importance of doing your due diligence ahead of time before you go to a medium. Mm-hmm. The more due diligence you do ahead of time, the less likelihood your reading is not going to be a healing event. So I wouldn't rush to just go to any medium. Again, do your due diligence. Check references, if you can get references. If not, check what's said on the internet, because chances are, if they're not doing a good job, someone's going to give them a bad review. And mm-hmm. if they're doing a bad job altogether, it's going to be more than one person giving them a bad review.
Okay.
And then also go with your gut. If this person, when you do a preliminary phone call with this person or you read their stuff, doesn't feel right, then don't do it. Then don't do it, because that's probably the person from the other side and or your higher self saying, you look, this isn't right. This person's not right. Something about this isn't kosher here. Then you should probably look for someone else. And there's enough people doing the work worldwide that you could find someone that's really going to resonate with you. And if you want, you could also ask your loved one, give me a sign that this is the right person I should be working with.
There you go. Is there another step in this too? Because to me, it seems like, okay, if I've made my peace and I've said what I need to say, both in this letter and then sending it up, burning it, and then going to a medium and trying to establish myself, I guess, in front of a medium, have I exhausted all avenues at that point? I've put it out there, and at that point, should I have found my peace, even through meditation and whatnot?
Well, it's, as I mentioned, you know, previously, it's a journey. And unfortunately, everyone's journey is going to be a little different. And in that, the second part of the book is writing a funeral service or a ceremony of life for the person. So you may want to go to where the person is buried, or even in your backyard, any place that you want to go, and really write a ceremony for them to really get complete closure. There's no law in most states saying that you cannot do a funeral service. And the book gives you step-by-step processes to do a funeral service and or ceremony of life service. That may give you the final closure in on the healing journey. But again, it's not about completely forgetting about the person. It's just keeping those positive memories of that person in your life and that relationship in your life. You want to get to the point where you're back to what your normal used to be and or what your new normal is in a manner that's not debilitating you. So that journey is going to take you as long as it takes. There is no dates and times. It's going to take what it takes. But if you start using these tools in your bereavement toolbox, it's going to make the journey go smoother and somewhat shorter than as opposed to just festering in the pain and misery and the suffering of this hole in your heart that's not being really mended or wounded or bound or being healed in any manner. So you've got to look at this hole in your heart or this wound in your heart as just that, a wound. Mm-hmm. And it may not heal completely, and there may be a scar there when you're done with this, but at least you'll be on your way to a life that you have now. So that person can move on with their journey on the other side. Because the truth of the matter is, if you're not happy, the other person on the other side's not happy. They're probably going to stick around. And realistically, you want to let those folks go to do their work on the other side. Based on your belief system, and my belief system based on my teachings, is that the soul never dies. So we incarnate for a reason, to learn certain lessons, and then we go to the other side and do other work and learn other lessons. So that person could, as you free them by letting them go, you're letting that person go on to do more work that they're supposed to learn, that their soul is supposed to learn, and you're moving on to do your work and your life lessons and what your soul is supposed to do on this side of the veil.
I have to ask this question, Reverend, because I do know of a person, or I have a person in my life that has not let go of a loved one, and it's been about 11 years now. And mind you say there's no time to that journey, but there's also no moving on with this person either. They've not done anything past, I guess you could say, step one of the grief process.
Right.
Let me ask you this, and you tell me if this is healthy or not. Should we be celebrating things like the day of someone's death? I understand birthdays. Birthdays are probably a healthy thing to celebrate when someone has passed away. you know, you recognize their day of birth. You know, I could see going to a cemetery and maybe laying out some flowers at a tombstone, or doing something to that effect and just wishing them a happy birthday and keeping happy memories of that person. But is it necessarily a good thing to celebrate the day somebody died?
Well, celebrations are all relative. You know, based on what you just said now, yes, that's a respectful celebration of acknowledging their death. All right? Anything past that is really, again, up to belief system, up to personal choices. Regarding the person you had mentioned, we all have to do work on ourselves. And you have to do the work to deal with the bereavement process. There's no shortcuts through it. Unfortunately, some things in life we can go around, we can go under, but the bereavement process is something you have to go through. And that process is going to be what you intend to do the work, but the work needs to be done. Unfortunately, many people don't want to do the work because they think the work is going to be painful. Many times the work, I won't say is painful, but the work sets you free because it eliminates the pain, anger, and sorrow of what you're carrying. But you have to make that choice of saying, okay, it's time for me to let this person go. It's time for me to process the death and all that comes with it. Many times people feel uncomfortable or they think it's wrong to be mad at the person who died. It's okay to swear at them, to be mad at them, hence the letters. The letter writing will help you get all these feelings out. Good feelings, bad feelings, things that needed to be said, things that should have been said. It all needs to come out, because if it doesn't come out, it just stays in your being, and you just aren't happy. Mm-hmm. And I find it hard to believe that your loved one wants you to be unhappy and carry this burden until you transition. All right. Once we go on the other side, it is believed that we shed our ego. So once we're on the other side, we only want the best for those people who are left on this side. And the best would be moving on with your life, grieving the loss, letting go of any ill will, any feelings, any bad feelings, or anything that needs to be said. Let it be said. Get it out of your system, good, bad, or indifferent, and then start gradually moving on with your life.
This is going to be a really tricky question here, Reverend. What would you tell somebody who's mourning someone to the point where they're thinking of taking their own life, where they don't want to take that journey? And I can think of one case that's actually come up in the last couple of days on social media, of a celebrity who's gone on social media and basically said they lost their son to suicide, and said that they don't want to, you know, I'm trying to remember the way the tweet went. The tweet said something to the effect of, I wake up in the morning, there used to be three in this household, and now I wake up in the morning and there's two. And, you know, I don't really see a reason to get up in the morning anymore. What do you say to that person who is mourning so badly that they don't see a reason to be around anymore?
Well, the minute someone makes that statement, it becomes a crisis and they should seek professional help immediately. That's the pat answer. Realistically, we're here. We all have our individual life purpose and we all have our individual work. So the person really needs to do their best effort to stay on the planet here as long as they can. Because realistically, if your work is not complete, again, this is based on teachings and based on belief systems, so I don't want to mislead your listeners. I want you to get an understanding. It is believed that if the soul does not complete its lessons on this earth, it will come back down again and do the life again. That doesn't mean you're going to come back to a beautiful life. If you had a nice life here, a comfortable life, you're going to come back again and do your life lessons until you complete them. So even though the pain may be great, taking, I won't say the easy way out, by taking one's life and thinking they're going to be with them or things are going to be better, there's probably a lesson in there of why they need to stay here, be it to complete their work, be it to complete their work and possibly help others through their unfortunate experience. Because many times those people who have lost a loved one that way become the best teachers to help other people who have lost children or lost loved ones. All right. So unfortunately, they need help immediately, and they need to understand that they need to start doing their work on themselves, possibly some of the tools that are discussed in my book, working with professional people in the psychological arena, working possibly with a medium. And again, there's no measurement of person's pain. We can't say, oh, I lost someone too, it's no big deal. It doesn't work that way. Your pain is your pain. You feel what you feel. And it's like telling someone who's depressed, snap out of it. I've been depressed. I've gotten through it. It doesn't work that way. Emotions are not logical or linear. You feel what you feel. But the reality of it is, that's why it's important to get help and to work with professionals who are going to help you on your journey to help you see things more clearly.
You just brought up an interesting point, and that is, how do we help the people that come to us who seem to be overwhelmed with grief? I mean, you know, you want to reach out and you want to be an ear to someone. But if you're not properly trained in that area, I mean, other than saying, well, and not wanting to be callous or rude or push someone off on a professional, you don't want someone to get to the point of taking their own life either over something like this. I mean, I've had in my life some pretty distraught people come to me and say that they don't know if they can take it anymore after having someone pass away.
Well, sometimes the most hardest thing to do, especially if you're a person who's a helper, and most of us are natural helpers, mm-hmm. is just to be there for the person and let them unload on you.
Okay.
You know, and that means just be there for them, let them talk, let them cry, let them do whatever they need to do to help at least break open a safety valve for their emotions. And many people feel like they need to say something or they need to be of help in some manner or other.
Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, just that you know, it's that handoff between, you know, I'm here for you and I want to be there for you. And, you know, I don't know that I can do any more than just be here for you. You really need to talk to somebody who can get you through this. It's that I don't want to call it an awkward phase or that awkward handoff, but how do you hand that person off to somebody who's trained to really get them through it?
Well, sometimes it's not a matter of handing off. It's a matter of maybe being there with them and helping them be there on their journey together. Maybe you could help the person find a professional and or go to the professional's office together. You don't need to sit in the actual service, the actual session, but you could be in the waiting room and you could help them find the right people until they get their druthers and get their wings about this situation. It's a very difficult place to be for both parties, obviously. But the best thing you do is to be supportive, help them, and check in on them, maybe be an accountability partner and say, oh, hi, how you doing? Mr. Seen, I just checking in. We spoke about you were going to make a phone call to a local bereavement group, a local the suicide phone line. You were going to start working with someone. I'm just checking in and seeing how you're doing. Did you move forward with this? So you could be supportive indirectly. But ultimately, the responsibility is of that person to put things in motion, to, again, start helping themselves. Because at the end of the day, we have to make an effort to help ourselves because no one can do the work for us. We have to do the work for ourselves, by ourselves, to help ourselves.
Okay. You have a chapter in your book called Connecting with Nature. Is there something about just getting out and about that will help with this process of trying to get over the sudden death of someone, that trauma of actually being able to touch the grass or feel the breeze or something that reconnects you with Mother Earth?
Yes. I mean, in part one, when we spoke about taking care of yourself, this is all part of it. Disconnect with everything. Go back to the basics. Again, if you do believe in God, a creator or something greater than you, you're going to find it in nature. Because in nature, if you notice, everything is just the way it is. The rock is the rock. The rock is not trying to pretend to be the tree. The tree is not trying to pretend to be the rock. It's just everything makes sense in nature. It's also a good place to, one thing we didn't really chat about too much, is to journal. Journaling is very important, to journal your feelings. And that goes in line with writing the letters. You know, whatever you feel, write it out. Write, you know, again, the good, the bad, or indifferent. You have permission to really tell it the way it is. If you hated the person, they abused you, there was a lot of bad things, get it out on paper. Conversely, if there are a lot of good things, put those there too. I miss you. I miss the time we had together. I miss this. I miss that. So journaling is very important. You marry that with being in nature, and nature just has a very calming way of putting things in perspective to you and putting things in perspective. And it's just a good place to be on so many different levels. Again, you can use some of these tools in nature. It's just another tool in your toolbox and your bereavement journey.
Let's talk about the subject that I brought up at the beginning of the program, and that is building something to remember your loved one by. Something like that silicone statue or something other than just a grave marker to remember our loved one by. Do you find it unusual, Reverend, that someone would build a silicone statue, keep it in their house or keep it on a swing in the front yard or have something like a construct to have that person around long after they're gone?
Well, I understand the concept. Obviously, in this particular application, it's a little off-center to us, but there are various religions and various races around the world that do keep their loved ones around in perpetuity in various different mechanisms. I don't know, I can't quote you the particulars now, but there is a tribe of people in Indonesia, when the person dies, they dress them up and they put them in a local plaza where they're seen, and they do pay tribute to them on their birthdays or on their day of transitioning. The Mexican culture has, for instance, the Day of the Dead. So it's not completely unfounded or unheard of. Obviously, this particular gentleman took his concern or his loss in a different route that modern times doesn't really see it as normal. But again, his paranormal in his culture may be the next normal in his society. It's really, there's no right or wrong. It's just right. What's right for him, you know? So, but in our manner of thinking, yeah, it's kind of off the beaten path.
Does building something like that lead to a dependency issue, though? I mean, are we expected almost to mourn somebody and move on and go to a different romantic relationship? Because I think we've put this stigma on our society that that's healthy. Like we talk, even if you're in a long-term relationship right now, we do have that conversation with that long-term partner or that wife or that, you know, that fiance or whoever it is. Well, if I ever died, who would you remarry? Or would you even think about remarrying? Or, you know, we kind of test those waters to see, would you move on without me? And we assume it's healthy that person would move on without us, and they'd go with somebody else and they would be happy. And I think we kind of fool ourselves into thinking, well, of course that person would want to move on and be happy, and we want them to move on and be happy. Why should they be miserable for the rest of their lives? What are we going to do about it? We're on the other side and we're doing our thing. So is it unreasonable for us to think that maybe they should be, I'm trying not to laugh at this, Reverend, that they should be locked up in a corner with a silicone statue of us for the rest of their life and be pining for us? I mean, is it healthier for us to say, you know, maybe you should find love elsewhere? Or is it healthier for us to say, you know, keep a silicone statue of me on the couch?
Well, I understand what you're saying, and to answer that in multiple, to unpack it, because there's a lot that you're bringing to the table.
Sure.
Number one, it boils down to cultural norms. All right, number one. Number two, if you recall, there was an actor called George Burns.
Yes.
George Burns loved his wife. He never remarried.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? Because he chose to keep that memory alive with her, and he didn't want to find anyone else. I'm sure he could have gotten remarried, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's really a decision of the ego while we're alive. While we're alive, yeah, obviously, the truth of the matter is most of us don't want to see that our loved one with someone else. That's married to me. You know, you're my partner. But realistically, I mean, you say what you will, and we can romanticize about this and spiritualize and call it what you will. But on the other side, the ego's let go.
Yeah.
So we want what's best for the person. Okay. Whatever that is. So the challenge is the ego phase in being, obviously, being bodies of a physical nature versus being in spirit and being in another plane where you're surrounded by love all the time. So to answer your question, you know, how to memorialize someone. I mean, we've seen the concept all over the place. I'm sure it's in Minnesota as well as in this part of the country. People will plant a tree,
mm-hmm.
or people will put a plaque on a park bench and things of that nature. But regarding cultural norms, it's all over the map, as there are many people in this world and many cultures and many races and many religious and spiritual traditions. There will be as many methods to grieve and mourn and memorialize an individual.
You know, speaking of George Burns, I actually have an autographed picture of George Burns.
Wow.
I bought it at an auction site, but I have an actual certified, authentic picture, autographed picture of George Burns. Just figured I'd throw that in for you, Reverend.
Sure, sure.
So, and I'm not that old, but I was a fan of, you know, Burns and Allen. So
yeah,
there you go.
Yep, the one, the Burns and Allen show. I grew up at the Burns and Allen show, sure.
There you go. So, there, we have something in common, Reverend. So I guess here in kind of wrapping up the program, I would ask you this, Reverend. It seems like no matter how we escape it, there are going to be different levels of grief. So there are going to be some people that are going to pass in our lives that, of course, we're going to mourn them, but it's easier for us to move on. And there's going to be others that are going to be devastating. Is there something we can do to kind of prepare ourselves ahead of time? Is there something that we can talk out with people? Maybe their kid, our kids, or maybe our spouses, or maybe our parents. Is there something that we can do to sit down and prepare ourselves for this eventuality? Because it's kind of a big thing. The closer these people are to us, the more we love them, the harder that this loss is going to be. Is there something we can do to kind of put that little protective shock off a bit and not have to deal with this trauma, even if it happens suddenly?
Well, the short answer is yes. The long answer is maybe. It's really up to you. The main thing I want to really emphasize to your listeners is don't shoot all over yourself.
Okay.
S-H-O-U-L-D.
Right.
Don't shoot all over yourself. Don't say, I should have done this. I should have said that. I should have done this with this person. I should have said that. Say what needs to be said. Don't wait. Because, again, every death is a sudden death. No matter, the person's got cancer. We know they're expected to live 6 to 9 months. When you get that phone call or you're there and the person leaves us and transitions to the other side, it is a sudden death. Don't fool yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Don't fool yourself. So that's why the best preparation is don't let things be unsaid. Before the person transitions, and you're going to feel what you feel. You know, there's no, again, the intellectual answer is the person is dead, they're gone, they're buried, move on with your life. That's the mental, intellectual answer. The emotional answer is you're going to feel what you're going to feel. So you might as well feel it, go through it, with your life in a manner that this person came into your life for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. Appreciate that memory. If you want to memorialize it with a tree, a plaque, some type of ritual you do every year by either going to their gravesite or just remembering the person,
mm-hmm.
because they'll know that you remembered them. The energy will travel in spirit. Write them a letter every year. Hi, it's your birthday. You left us on this date. I still think of you. I still miss you. Write that letter. Again, burn it. Put some salt on it. It'll get to them. And I'm sure they'll send you some type of sign. And ask for a sign. You know, for instance, a friend of mine lost her son to suicide, and he used to like bluebirds. So what happens is she gets an occasional sign of a bluebird that shows up at her house unannounced or outside. So she gets that sign. So ask for a sign before they go and say, look, you know, when you're gone, you know, what kind of sign should I be looking for? A breeze, a bird, a color, or this or that. So really, that's really my best suggestions. Don't shoot all over yourself. Don't let things be unsaid, because life has a funny way of moving very quickly. And, you know, what, you know, I'm personally 63. One minute, I was 20. I turned around. I was 40. I turned around again. I was 60. And here I am at 63.
There you go.
So my suggestion is do what you can while people are alive. Because once they're dead, obviously. And then, you know, then you say, oh, I should have said this, I should have said that, I should have done this, and I should have done that. But it's a personalized journey. You know, death is a cycle of life. Obviously, we were born, and we celebrate that person coming into our existence, and we celebrate the person leaving. So we want to really look at it as a sacred event in one's life, and view the journey, the bereavement journey, no matter how short or long it is, as a sacred process, a sacred ceremony, a sacred ritual in your life that should be honored. You should be honoring yourself and honoring the journey and honoring the loved one that has been lost.
There you go. Amen. All right. The book is I Didn't Get a Chance to Say Goodbye. Now What Can I Do? Practical Tools to Learn to Manage the Pain, Anger, and Sorrow of Not Achieving Closure with a Loved One and Start Living a Well-Balanced, Peaceful, and Content Life. Reverend Oreste D. Aversa is our guest. The link is in the description of this program. Click on the link, folks, get the book, and help yourself manage through that traumatic death. Reverend, I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much once again for having me as a guest on your show.
Thank you. I want to thank Reverend Oreste D. Aversa for being on our show today, talking a little bit about traumatic death, how we get over it, or at least try to get over it in some amount of time or dealing with that traumatic death. On tomorrow's show, is you is or is you not an empath? We kind of continue on this bit of a psychic journey, if you want to call it a psychic journey. An interesting figure with our guest tomorrow, in that only 2% of people out there who claim to be an empath are actually an empath. You heard me right. 2% of people who claim to be an empath are actually an empath. Do you actually feel the pain of others? That's the question I'm going to give you. Or are you actually physically sympathetic to others? We're going to solve that mystery tomorrow with our guest. Our guest is Jennifer Magg. She's an actual empath. And we're going to learn the difference between whether you're an empath or you're just physically sensitive. I know. Did I confuse you? You'll find out the answer tomorrow. That'll be our guest, Jennifer Magg. She's got a book out there called Take on God. And we are going to solve the mystery as to whether you're an empath or you just claim to be. Oh, I'm going to love tomorrow's show. Tomorrow's show is going to get me plenty of emails, folks. I don't know that you're going to be very happy with me after tomorrow's show. So, Jennifer Magg's our guest tomorrow, right here on the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio.